Rapper and MC Baba Brinkman brings his popular performance piece, The Rap Canterbury Tales, to the printed page in his new book, The Rap Canterbury Tales, resurrecting Chaucer's brilliant stories from their vellum mausoleum into visible and audible contemporary forms that will once again delight and edify both live audiences and readers, a rebirth of what poetry should be in its essence and once was. Since Chaucer has become an unassailable icon of print culture and hip-hop is an unassailable icon of contemporary digital cool, Brinkman saw this radical new fusion of content and style as the perfect medium to deliver Chaucer's astonishingly timeless messages to a younger generation. Baba Brinkman began his rap career at 19, freestyling and writing songs in his hometown of Vancouver, Canada. During his development as an MC, he also completed both a BA with honors from Simon Fraser University and an MA in Medieval and Renaissance English Literature from the University of Victoria. His thesis drew parallels between the worlds of rap music and poetry. He began performing the Rap Canterbury Tales in 2004, and today he's our guest on Nonfiction and at WBAI. Baba Brinkman, welcome to Nonfiction and to WBAI.
Thanks for having me in.
What is this book about?
This book is about synchronicity between different styles and eras of poetry, specifically Geoffrey Chaucer, who was the main poet in the 14th century, and about hip-hop music and lyricism, which is the main, I think, form of lyrical expression that exists today.
Now, what do you mean when you say Chaucer was the main poet in the 14th century?
He was one of the biggest innovators back then in Middle England. The English language was not really considered a literary form. It was maybe for fairy tales or romances. But if you asked somebody in the 14th century what literature was, they would have thought it was in Latin or French or maybe Italian. And Chaucer was one of the first poets who authored a body of work that was recognized by his peers as literature, but in the English language. So that's why he's seen as the father of English literature.
What do we mean by literature then? People were writing in English, weren't they, in some ways? When you say literature, what is it you're saying that Chaucer did?
I think literature, as opposed to just writing in general, becomes kind of a cipher for the culture and manages to interpret rather than just reflect what's going on around him socially. He engages with a lot of the debates that are going on at his time, but through a lens of telling stories and talking about the world in mythical context. So I guess it's just enriched. There's something to be read and something to be understood. You could say that of any writing, but literature has a depth as well, where the more closely read it, the more you get from it, and there are layers of intention behind what's being said.
Why did you do this book?
Because I think that hip-hop has the potential to be and is now becoming a form of literature in the same sense because of the depth of some of the lyricism that's in there. And so I really saw kinship between what rappers were doing today and what Chaucer and other poets were doing for his time as well. And so I thought, here's a way that I can make that connection between the literary culture of the English Renaissance medieval time and hip-hop today.
Who was Chaucer?
Chaucer was a public servant, the son of a kind of wine merchant, middle-class family, who was taken on as a scribe by the king and by the court, and he became kind of a jack-of-all-trades when it came to official jobs. So he ran the customs. He was the chief forester for some point. He was actually taken hostage as a spy once and ransomed by the king and held down a variety of jobs that allowed him to have encounters with pretty much every type of person you would have encountered in the Middle Ages in England. So he, on the side, while working these various jobs, he wrote a vast body of poems which have come down to us now and teach us about what medieval society was like.
Now, is there a modern counterpart to a man with this variety of positions, it seems?
That's a good question. I'd say maybe a filmmaker would come across that diverse a group of people in the course of their work. I always think that it's fascinating how an actor gets to get into so many different people's shoes and follow around a policeman or follow around a scholar or a government official or whatever. But Chaucer would have been, I'm not sure what the exact analogy would be for today, but it's maybe an actor or a filmmaker.
Varied experiences, nonetheless. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying about Chaucer and English is that and this is how it kind of popped into my head, is it the difference between making laundry lists and making narratives? Is that kind of it? Like, what did people do with the English language before Chaucer started making these poems and stories?
Well, there are earlier poems. I mean, Beowulf is in an even earlier version of English than the Middle English that Chaucer uses. But no, it's not about laundry lists. I mean, that is how writing started, 5,000 years ago, is with just lists of, items that were in the inventory of the king or whatever. But in Chaucer's England, before Chaucer, there are a number of other poems. There's Beowulf, there's the Pearl Manuscript, there's Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, and Chaucer had other contemporaries who were writing as well. And so, Chaucer doesn't have an exclusive hold on what we consider literature for that time. He just seems to have, had the broadest vision for what could be done with language of anybody who was using it. He seems to have transcended his time more than most people who were writing at that time. But, of course, there were a variety of stories being told. Maybe it was more that other poets than him, were more accepting of formulas and genres and, this is what a metric romance sounds like and you don't mess with tradition, you just reiterate it. Whereas Chaucer was really somebody who reinvented every technique that he took on in every genre of poetry.
It sounds like you're describing someone who kind of took a quantum leap. Like when you look at what came before him and look at his stuff, it's like a big jump forward in many ways.
Absolutely. And I think part of the reason that he holds such a sway for that time also is that there isn't, if you look at the canon of English literature and what names are in the list in the Norton Anthology, you see Chaucer, and the next person we study after Chaucer comes over 100 years later. That's John Skelton. So, it's kind of, and this is a bit of a simplification, but it's kind of received wisdom in English literary studies that the next 100 years, all the poets who wrote in the 15th century and the 100 years after Chaucer are all kind of Chaucer imitators, and they all talk about in their lyrics how the great laureate Geoffrey Chaucer is the father of their style, but it took almost 100 years for somebody as inventive as Chaucer to reconceive of what could be done with literature in English again. And so, the weight of him as a figure in English literary history, that's a signifier. What came before, also what came after.
What came after. What are the Canterbury Tales?
Canterbury Tales is his magnum opus. After he had been writing for decades, the last great work that he took on was the Canterbury Tales, and it's a collection of stories where he draws together these short narratives that he had been working on, some of which were pre-written and some he wrote for the text. And so, it's a storytelling collection with a framing narrative about a group of pilgrims who are going on a journey from London to Canterbury. And along the way, they decide they're going to have a competition and play a game and do a storytelling contest. So each one will tell a tale. And then whoever tells the best tale will get a prize. And the book that comes down to us is this collection of stories, each one told in the voice of a different character, a different narrator or pilgrim that was on this journey.
So it's a story within a story framing device, if you will?
Yeah, it's 24 stories within one overarching story about...
About people telling stories?
Yes, it's a story about telling stories, that's right.
Wow, that's really, really interesting. And can you sum up the narrative? I mean, 24 sounds like a lot of, besides being the name of a hit TV show, it sounds like like a lot of stories to summarize. Is there a general thread to them, or is it all over the place?
It's all over the place because the pilgrim group that he's illustrating in the book is so diverse. So you have people from all levels of medieval society, and each one of them is named after their job or the vocation. So you have the knight, the miller, the prioress, the wife of Bath, the summoner, and each one of those had expectations built around them based on people's social ideas about what that kind of person was, and Chaucer's playing with those ideas. And so each of the tales that's told by one of those characters has some connection to what that person's personality is like. And Chaucer describes each of the personalities in great detail. So there's really no way to say the Canterbury Tales are about this, except for the Canterbury Tales are about storytelling and about the way stories and culture interact and create one another. But each tale itself is about something totally different. Although, there's common themes. So there's a lot of tension between old people and young people that go on in the stories. That's a theme. There's a lot of tension between the genders and, ideas about relationships and how they should work comes up quite a lot. And morality tales about, greed and the way to live right in the world.
How long are the Canterbury Tales? I mean, for the if someone were to have them all in their hand, like how many pages is the document?
I think the book is about 500 or 600 pages when it's just printed in today's text. There's the Riverside Chaucer is out as a paperback, and it has all 24 of them in the whole frame story. So you know, it's relatively long to read, but it's all written in iambic pentameter couplets as well.
Now, what does that mean?
It means that each line has 5 stresses in it, and the rhymes line with each other in pairs. Sometimes he does a more complicated kind of heroic stanza form, but if you want to hear what some of the lines of the Canterbury Tales sound like, I could recite some of them for you.
Would you be so kind?
Absolutely. So the opening lines to the Knight's Tale go, Willem, as in old stories tellinus, there was a duke that hicht a Theseus. Of Athens he was lord and governor, and in his team was switch a conqueror, that greater was there known under the sun. Full many a rich country had he won, what with his honor and his chivalry, he conquered had the land of Femini, that Willem was eclipsed to Scythia, and wedded their queen Polita. And I could go on and on with this, but it's kind of older English than Shakespeare, but still understandable if you actually look at each word. You know, they're recognizable words.
And and by describing it as iambic pentameter, et cetera, you're meaning what? Could you slow that down a bit so we can hear it, what you're...
Sure. It's a fairly recognizable cadence because that's what Shakespeare wrote in as well. So each of Shakespeare's lines is also an iambic pentameter line. So from Romeo and Juliet, but soft what light from yonder window breaks. It is the east and Juliet is the sun. Da 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 da. And every other syllable is stressed. And this became the standard for writing in English after Chaucer. But Chaucer actually invented iambic pentameter for the English language. This is part of the reason why he's seen as a great innovator, because everyone before him had written either in an alliterative long line or in a tetrameter line. And Chaucer...
Tetrameter, I'm sure, means 4.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
So, ba-bum, 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 ba-bum. And here we sit and talk upon the mic until the break of dawn. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? Chaucer added these 2 extra beats to each line while still using the rhyme pattern of before, and this just opened up the possibilities of the narrative. It became less constrained, I guess, because you could rhyme less frequently. And it's also the extra beat in each line makes it less of a kind of predictable sing-song style, if you know what I mean. That's kind of repetitive sing-song, whereas the extra beat opens it up and gives you more potential to let the narrative flow through the line rather than having to pause at the end of each line and such.
Why did the Canterbury Tales captivate you?
I think partially because the characters are so recognizable. Chaucer talks about, you know, how one person gets drunk all the time and breaks down doors with his head and, you know, likes to pick fights with people, and how someone else, Prioress, has a pretension towards piety, but she doesn't feed the homeless. She feeds her little toy dogs pieces of fine bread. And, you know, all the personalities Chaucer creates, I feel like I knew people like that, you know, and it made me feel like people hadn't changed. And also Chaucer is just he's a master storyteller. And there's so much really insightful humor in the Canterbury Tales. I was reading it as part of a literature course when I was doing my undergraduate, and I just thought, you know, people need to know these stories. You can learn so much from them. And the attitude Chaucer has towards people is this kind of non-judgmental, beneficent, but, you know, also concerned with social justice, you know, concerned with, you know, changing the world for the better, but in a benign way so that you work little by little and, you know, deal with people on the level, you know, for who they are rather than prejudging them or preconceiving of what they're like.
We're speaking with Baba Brinkman. His book is titled The Rap Canterbury Tales, illustrated by his brother on Talon Books Press in Vancouver, where he's from. He's from Vancouver. And this book is a companion to a CD, The Rap Canterbury Tales, and on which, let me see if I can just best explain this to our listeners, the music is, if you will, his interpretation of the Canterbury Tales, and the lyrics are provided in the book. So you can read along to what you're hearing, and he has a rather erudite essay in the front in which he talks about the relationship of rhyme and meter to language, and of these 2 forms, hip-hop and Middle English poetry, separated by hundreds of years, but a relationship that he detects between them and that is fused in the book and on the album. Why do a hip-hop version of the Canterbury Tales?
Well, I got lots of motivations for doing this. One of them is that I wanted Chaucer to live again for this time. And Chaucer, when he was writing in his time, you know, this was meant to be orally recited for groups of listeners. It was meant to be a performance, and he was writing it on the page so that he or someone else could recite it. But Middle English doesn't have the same effect on an audience now as it did in that time because the language has changed so much. So when you recite Chaucer now, you get a lot of blank stares off of people.
Because nobody understands what's being said.
Yeah, the words are too different. And then, but there are translations of Chaucer that are line-by-line translations, but they're mostly done by people who don't have the same kind of sense of playfulness and just lyrical ability that Chaucer has. And most of them were produced in, either Victorian era or in the mid 20th century, and they feel a little stale dated. I mean, iambic pentameter itself feels like a stale dated rhyme form now because it's been done so much. So I thought, what for our time would be like Chaucer for his time, and rap fit that bill so much because in Chaucer's time, Middle English was seen as the language of the people. It was a vernacular. It was, what people would appreciate whether they were drinking at a bar or, whatever walk of life. And so I thought I could make Chaucer's stories live by speaking in the language of my peers, which is hip-hop.
That's really interesting. And part of what's really interesting about that is this. A lot of this work now is seen as the highest form of culture that's ever been produced and is seen as distant. It's seen as, you might say, elegant, mm-hmm. Above the common man. And what you're saying is that it was the music, it was the lyricism to which people, I guess, I wouldn't say made love since they didn't have iPods back then or CDs, but, they drank to, I guess they were festive to, they, worked to maybe.
It was entertainment. Chaucer was writing it partially for entertainment of his peers, and there's something very subversive about the fact that he was writing in English, because other poets who were well-educated poets like Chaucer in his time were writing in Latin or writing in French because they didn't think English would be taken seriously. And so people for his time would have seen this as subversive, like, you're going to take Petrarch, you're going to take Boccaccio, Dante, these great laureates, and you're going to turn them into English. That would have seemed like a transgressive thing that he was doing. And I just thought it was really ironic that now Chaucer is one of our dusty books of literature in the library, whereas for his time, there's quite a lot of evidence that this is not what it was meant to be originally, but that's how language changes. And then here I was encountering a lot of attitudes from people about how hip-hop is just a popular music form, and it's just like, it's just misogynist, radio hits and stuff like that. And I was thinking, actually, hip-hop has a lot of depth and complexity and the potential to be a literary form as well in how much you can communicate with it. So I'm going to take, this form that used to be popular, has become literary, and I'm going to turn it popular again. I really saw this as like a continuation of Chaucer's tradition. And I knew that any professor who tried to take me to task about it and be like, how dare you do this to our icon, Chaucer? Why, he's the father of English literature. I would get accused of being irreverent towards Chaucer for turning it into rap. I mean, that's everyone's instant assumption about it, is that I'm just, dumbing it down. Or, it's going to be like Chaucer for Dummies or something. But really, Chaucer was Petrarch for Dummies. So that just comes from a separate attitude, that really that doesn't acknowledge or appreciate the purpose of what Chaucer was writing for.
Right now we're going to listen to a little bit from the rap Canterbury Tales, and we're going to listen to track number 6, The Miller's Tale. Now, what are we going to be hearing when this starts, and what are you talking about on this? First of all, what was Chaucer talking about, and then what did you do with it?
My versions of Chaucer's tales are actually almost exactly the same. I've tried to keep the story identical to in the plot, in the names of the characters, everything, as the original with this. So Chaucer's Miller is a character who is a kind of drunken, rude boy who's trying to pick fights with people and trash talk everybody. And his tale is about this old carpenter who's rich, named John, who's married this beautiful young wife that he can't satisfy because he's impotent. So she goes and looks for someone else to hook up with, and there's this clever young student, Nicholas, who's going to try and trick the husband into getting out of the way so that he can get access to the bedroom. This is fairly scandalous stuff, Chaucer was out to offend some people with it, so I'm kind of on the same path with that.
And it sounds like what as Chaucer wrote it?
The original sounds like this. Whilom there was dwelling at Oxenford a rich ganoff that guestes held at a board, and of his craft he was a carpenter. With him there was dwelling a poor scholar had learned art, but all his fantasy was turned for to learn astrology, and could a certain of conclusions to demon by interrogations of that men asked him in certain horas, when that men should have a drocht or else a shores. And if men asked him what should befall of everything, I may not reckon him all. This clerk was clept Hendy Nicholas, of dearne love he could, and of solace, and thereto he was sleek and full privy, and like a maiden make a for to see. A chamber had he in that hostelry, alone, without in any company, full fetishly adight with herb as swote, and he himself as sweet as is the rot of licorice, or as any setawal. His almagest in book as great and small, his astrolabe longing for his art, his ogrim stones lay in fair apart, on shelves couched at his bed as heed, his press it covered with a falding reed, and all above there lay a gay sow tree, on which he made a nicht's melody, so sweetly that all the chamber rung, and Angelus ad virginum he sung.
Now, this is something that in Chaucer's day, people would have stood up in a crowd and recited that way, and people would have stood around and nodded their heads. I mean, or like, or laughed.
I think they would have laughed, yeah. I mean, there are illustrations that have come down of Chaucer, you know, the painting of him with his book laid out on a codex in front of, you know, the court, and all of the lords and ladies are sitting around. It's kind of this pleasant after-dinner entertainment thing that would have happened, and he was reciting from his book. And all the references in here, you know, the things that he's talking about the almagest and the setawal and all the, you know, all the little metaphors and similes, you know, similarly to hip-hop, you know, it's, if I ever switch sides like Anakin, he would sell everything instead, including the mannequin. And got a new bitch, now Jennifer Aniston. You know, these are all pop culture references that people get. Anakin, Star Wars, Jennifer Aniston, breakup. Now, what Chaucer's doing is the exact same thing for his time. These are metaphors that people in his time would have chuckled at or thought, oh, how clever that he would pull that in to describe a character.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
And this is how it sounds on your record. When you take these words and put them in modern terms, this is how it sounds.
Check this out. Listen to this tune. It's about a rich man licking a silver spoon who lived in a mansion and rented a room to this young scholar kid who'd been to the two most respected colleges for logic and philosophy. Now he got scholarships, but he still lived in poverty due to the preposterous cost of living. Without a dollar, he lived as an astrologist and followed his dreams. His name was Nicholas. And when it came to women, his game was limitless. The ladies he visited became libidinous when he played his instrument. He'd just lick his lips and sing a melody as sweet as licorice. His virility eclipsed the man he was living with, a rich elderly fella whose name was John. Now his flame was gone, and still he'd married a young filly who was really beyond his ability to satisfy. Cause in the sack, this guy was on disability. He was prone to senility, pride and jealousy. He slept with open eyes, terrified of infidelity. His wife brought humility to life. In the village she liked to shop, wearing her husband's ring, with her cheeks painted up a slutty pink. Her name was Allison, and she had a naughty stink. Her mouth was said to be as sweet as bubbly drink. And if you saw her on the street, you'd probably think she was a hottie and had the body of a mink. You'd probably think a lot of things and start groveling, especially if she dropped the wink, heart softening with flirting glances that often fling a person's senses off the brink and begin to work against us. Now, Nicholas waited for the right circumstances, and eventually he managed to catch her defenseless, and he reached beneath her skirt with perverted intentions. It was beneath her to stand such utter disrespect, and she refused this would-be lover's kiss with threats that she would scream bloody murder and risk his neck, though to him it seemed like just a twisted test. And Nicholas persisted until her lips were set and dripping wet, as lips are quick to get if caressed into bliss by gifted breath. Oh, yeah. And Nicholas pressed her with his best tricks until at last she just said yes to the gist of his requests for illicit sex. Except she explicitly told him this, direct. She said, "Wait, my husband is jealous as well as overzealous. He's a menace when it comes to me looking at other fellas. You can tell his love is hellish, so while this develops, we need to keep it secret so that he doesn't kill us." Nicholas wasn't filled with fear. He was cool. He was like, "You think I spent all these years at school without preparing the tools to make married men fools? I'm aware of the rules. Just watch the master at work. And with these brash words, turns, he patted her curves, grabbed at her, kissed her, and had his last flirt before she gathered her skirts and went to mass at her church. Now this church had a clerk whose name was Absalon, a romantic, emasculate man who had this long hair that was blonde and brushed so that it shone. His back was
And that's from
strong.
The Miller's Tale from the rap Canterbury Tales by Baba Brinkman. We'll be back right after this.